Good morning. You are listening to WPRK Winter Park, Florida, and this is the Sandspur Hour.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. You just heard Amir Sade.
Yes, you did. And you were also originally listening to Greg Golden.
You ever see that where in a movie poster they have, like, the names are really big, but they're over the wrong people?
Yeah. That's always confusing.
Why do they do that?
Especially when there's, like, three people, and, like, obviously the female actress's name is over one of the male actors.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, that definitely is not, like, Anne Hathaway. That definitely is, like, a 50-year-old John Leguizamo.
That's always a confusion that I make.
Right? Because at the moment you're like, wow, Anne Hathaway definitely looks more mannish than I last saw her.
And short.
And short, exactly.
At any rate, we're here to discuss the goings-on of Rollins, the world, the country,
etc.
etc.
Yes.
There's
a lot to talk about.
There is a lot to talk about. We got a lot on the docket this morning.
Yes, we do.
We want to talk about the Prism scandal.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Never before has a shape sounded so menacing since the Bermuda Triangle.
I don't think a prism is a shape.
Prisms are shapes.
It's like a geometric shape.
It's a geometric.
No, I think you could have prisms of many shapes. At any rate, yes. We will also be talking about, what else do we have?
We have NBA finals.
Oh, yeah, the finals. Who's watching those? Me?
Some people are, yeah.
Good. And we also have a riveting story.
We have stories, Kickstarter.
Kickstarter. Yes.
Going to be talking about.
I have that research right in front of my face.
Exactly.
So didn't even look at it.
Bad, interestingness. What is Kickstarter? And
yeah. We will kickstart your knowledge of this exciting website.
Yes, that has been around for a while, but is really picking up steam over the last few months.
Yeah, mainstream steam.
Mainstream steam, folks.
Yeah. Ooh. So, we also have, hey, guess what? You see this Where the Wild Things Are shirt I'm wearing?
Yes, Greg, the thing that I can obviously see, but unfortunately our viewers cannot.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Today is actually Maurice Sendak, who is now passed, but the date of anniversary of his birth, he would have been 85.
I know. Thank you, Google.
I know.
Thank you, Google.
When I went on the Google, I was like,
it's one of those
Where things. The Wild Things At? That's on my shirt.
And
what
Google's making a whole little image, their whole famous image on it, like for their homepage.
The doodle.
Like, the doodle.
Googly doodly.
Google doodle. So yes, if you don't believe us, go on Google, check out the doodle. It's always fun and riveting.
Yeah. So you can find that on google.com.
Yes, but yes, not on our website, but on Google. Or we can maybe link it to the, just, here's Google.
Okay, tell us about the Prism.
Yes, Prism. So, if you do not know what is the Prism scandal, it's actually quite interesting, quite riveting. Generally, what it's talking about is last week, a man, Edward
Snowden,
who's not really a man, he's quite young individual.
29.
Is being called the NSA whistleblower, where he revealed a top-secret operation known as the Prism. It's a Prism, I guess, covert operation between the NSA, FBI, and some of the major technological companies used by most every average citizen in the United States. These companies and organizations were Microsoft/Hotmail, Google, Yahoo, Facebook, Paltalk, YouTube, Skype, AOL, and Apple. And pretty much what ended up happening was, in detail, in this Prism program, information from emails, chats, video/voice, photos, stored data, VOIPs, file transfers, video conferencing, notifications of target activity, so logins, etc., online social networking details, and also special requests were all being taken in, and all those records were, you know, over the last 6 years, since roughly 2006, have been taken a hold of by the United States government, which is some calling very illegal and also infringing upon the rights of citizens on a amazingly huge scale that has never been seen before.
Absolutely. Who on the internet isn't using one of those services?
It's pretty much saying every single, like, it's not even like when people are like, oh, I don't like going on Facebook because whatever. Yeah. No, it's like anything you ever Google searched or you Yahooed. I mean, most any electronic mail is covered in this, because it's Hotmail, it's Google, it's Yahoo, it's everything. And it's really disturbing. It is one of the most disturbing things that have kind of come out, and it's being tantamount to the Patriot Act. Although the Patriot Act, many will argue, was something that at least had the veil of, oh, well, this is for national security. It's only going to be used under dire circumstances, regardless of how it was implemented. This was just literally in NSA kind of covert operation that had been going on for many years. So this goes under both the Obama and the Bush administration. Ironically enough, which is something I sent to Greg, 5 out of the 8 organizations, when this story kind of came out, immediately denied it. But in statements that were near identical. So there were some people kind of saying that, isn't that kind of fishy that, like, Google and Yahoo and Facebook all kind of come out, like, within hours of one another, kind of saying the exact same thing? So it is fascinating, and it's something that is when you read a story like this, it's kind of cliche, but it's very Orwellian. And it's very much so,
very Hellerian. Joseph Heller. Snowden is the name of a character from Catch-22.
Fun fact, folks. Fun fact.
Throw that out at your next dinner party.
But and the really cool thing about this story is the guy actually revealed himself over the weekend, and he has said that, I didn't do anything wrong. You know, he's very steadfast in his belief, and is like, no, I did what was right. I wanted to, quote, protect basic liberties. And obviously, of course, the White House has responded. The president has responded. And the president has made some kind of, has made really interesting statements to this effect. He had his press conference a few days beforehand. And one of the things that people are really harping on is the line where he says you can't have 100% freedom or security, sorry, and 100% privacy. And that is something that it's funny how Republicans right now obviously are going big, and most media outlets are going big, but especially, you know, Fox right now, that's the big story. It's fascinating to see how just 5-6 years completely whitewashes over the Bush era, which, if the president, you know, back then the president was asking for virtually the same exact thing, and it was seen, oh, this is national security, but now it's like, how dare he, you know? And it's, but I mean, and for me, as somebody who did not support the Patriot Act back in 2003 and whatnot, I still obviously do not support anything like this. So it's very shocking. It's very jarring. And it's one of these things where it's kind of like, you know, if you give up some of your basic personal liberties, you know, like that very, you know, famous, I think it was Ben Franklin quote, yeah, you know, if you are willing to give up some of your liberty for security, you don't deserve any. And obviously,
or either. Yeah.
You deserve none of them. So, yeah.
Right. Part of what Obama's claims were is that they are for national security purposes, and that it's mostly targeting communications coming in from overseas and out of country. And so whether or not you're willing to consider that that's based on trying to prevent terrorism or what the real goal would be there is up for debate. I think one of the more interesting parts of the story is that Snowden did reveal himself.
Yeah.
You know, you have government leakers, people who have leaked to Assange and WikiLeaks, haven't come public yet.
Bradley Manning is now going on trial and has been in Gitmo for how long? I mean, it's not, you know, if you were to just look at Bradley Manning and what he has gone through, and just being thrown in Guantanamo Bay with very little communication and a lot of secrecy going on there, it takes a lot to be like, no, I'm going to reveal myself. And his reason was he was saying, according to his conscience and stuff, but B, he says, I don't want to live in a society that does these sort of things. I do not want to live in a world where everything I do and say is recorded. That is not something I am willing to support or live under. That's a direct quote from his, that he told the Guardian newspaper. He was just very much like, I'm not going to hide about it because I didn't do anything wrong. And yes, he does mention also that he fears, you know, the United States retribution, and obviously he worries about his family, but it'll be very interesting to see what occurs over the next few days, because you get a very mixed sense of what the talking point is. It's almost as if the United States is saying, and the White House is saying, we're sorry we got caught. We don't like leaks. When we do illegal things or things that are questionable, we need to make sure that next time things don't get leaked. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like we're not sorry for what we did. We're sorry that
we got caught.
Or at least we're sorry it came out in this way so that we couldn't have time to spin it in a more attractive manner.
Right.
Almost.
And were you saying that Snowden does have, like, a wife and kids?
Something like that. Yeah. It says family. I haven't read that part. But, it seems, you know.
Because he might not be coming back to the U.S. anytime soon.
Of course not.
Unless it's for a trial that Hong Kong, where he is currently located.
Yes, which is really cool, too. I think that kind of adds, like, just my own, like, personal, like, mental, like, fantasy. Like, hold up. It says, hold up in a hotel in Hong Kong. Like, that's pretty legit. That's, like, some, you know, diehard stuff. I don't know. It's just me.
Hopefully it doesn't come to that. But
I don't know.
But Hong Kong may comply with the U.S.'s request. That's an article that I read this morning that I have open now that's saying that a Hong Kong legislator and former security secretary said, we work very closely with U.S. authorities, and he really chose Hong Kong based on unfortunate ignorance thinking that.
Here's the thing, folks. Here's what I will say, and I'm not advising you to do anything. If you ever want to escape extradition, just by the way, gain French citizenship and go to France, because France does not extradite its citizens. So if you, I'm not saying do anything or commit
any crimes.
Do anything like that.
But historically, this has worked.
Historically,
this has happened.
A la Roman Polanski.
Right.
Somehow gain French citizenship in between the time you're going to, but not don't, something happens, and then go to France because they don't extradite their citizens. Just saying.
Probably. One other angle of the story that I want to talk about is the people who have been defending it and saying, well, what do you have to hide? Have you been talking to terrorists? Like, well, then you're fine.
Look at Julian Assange. Like, it's not like he's been talking. He was talking to terrorists or the whole WikiLeaks thing, but it was just.
True. And I wouldn't call what Snowden did treason.
Which some people are calling.
Well, why? What? Under what?
Well, he revealed national secret. The line is this. The line is he committed treason because he revealed national secrets that makes the United States vulnerable to outside potential terrorism or whatnot.
Because now Al-Qaeda knows it can use Verizon? because
which is also the same. Actually, and this scandal is 10 times worse than Verizon, because Verizon is just, oh, okay, it's like one.
Yeah, they're really getting named as like the.
And who has Verizon anymore, folks? Come on, Sprint, AT&T. What do we know? T-Mobile. Who uses Verizon? It's not that big a deal. That would be the thing the White House used to spin. Guy, first of all, guys, who really uses Verizon? Really, only terrorists use Verizon. No, but I think the biggest thing is that you can really use treason for just about anything in this kind of day in the age. Like, if you look at, like, back at, like, Edward R. Murrow or, like, the Walter Cronkite era, like, something like this would be seen as riveting journalism, and because the media was held at such high esteem and it was very muckraky in these moments, like, it was almost as if, like, if they got caught, they were caught. Yeah, they would try and, like, shut it down as soon as, you know, so that never came to light, but once it came to light, what's done is done. Now it's completely different. Like, it's like they try and shut it down beforehand. Even once you release it, they're going to go after you. It's like, even when they know they're wrong, it's like, nope, we're going to.
Who's
like,
wrong?
The United States government.
Oh.
Even when, like, the government's in the wrong or whatnot, like, it's, you know, it's a completely different era now, especially because it's not, you know, technically this was released through, like, a media conglomerate. Like, it was The Guardian.
Right.
But it's still, like, this, who is this, like, 29-year-old Snowden think he is? We're going to go after him and all his kind. Murr.
But still, the question of how this affects national security, are, like, because the government wants you to think that everything is being surveilled, and now that the surveilled corporations have been named.
I think that it's the opposite. I think they don't want you to know everything's being surveilled.
Right, but how does that present an issue with regards to just the specific notion of national security and its threats?
I think now that it makes. I think that what their excuse would be is it makes people less inclined to be more comfortable or more forthright online over the internet. And
I'll buy that.
People who believed, oh, well, like, certain websites are, like, maybe Facebook is being, like, monitored, but, like, if we do a Skype conversation, like, they're not going to monitor Skype because that's relatively new and, like, you know what I mean? Or, like, I think that's kind of the mindset.
Magic
is, like,
Jack.
Magic. Yeah, so I don't, I just think, I think right now what this does is we're slowly coming to an age where it's, we have accepted almost a lack of, you know, we will give up our freedom very easily without very much of a fight for that sense of security. And I think at this point, because technology is so great and because we are so connected and we are so, I think, maybe now, even you would think that now that we're more technologically savvy, we would become more secure because we understand the internet is not. We treat the internet like it's this, like, vast pool or like this black hole where you can just kind of throw anything out there and, like, whatever, it doesn't matter. It's like you're angry, you want to vent there, you know, you want to say something bad about your boss, it's fine. You just don't friend them, and it'll never come back to bite you. But time and time again, we see with Snapchat or what have you, it's like everything is stored forever. And if you are not, I think the only solace in this is that all of the younger generation is doing it. So to try and use something like this in the future, you know, maybe even political, because that's one of the biggest things. Like, you know, they tell you, especially for, like, young people who are, like, kind of into politics, like me, you know, or want to go to law school, a lot of the professors and a lot of the people who you'll talk to, it's like, watch out what you put on Facebook, watch out what you say. And I think the only solace that kind of comes from that is everybody's doing it. So it's becomes very much a moot point where it's like, you know, watch out what you say. Yes, it is important because, you know, obviously now you know the government's watching everything you say and do, so that's fun. But, you know, it becomes less of a, oh, if you say something, 30 years down the line, somebody may find it and they'll use it against you, because really at this point, everybody's doing it.
Right. And going back to the question of whether, you know, if you're not talking to a terrorist, you'll be okay sort of thing. But the problem that really arises there is what happens when the definition of terrorism changes? You know, who's in the role of defining what a terrorist is? Is it when you say something bad about your boss and someone thinks that you're out to literally get them or something?
Or what if your boss is the United States government? And I think something easily as, well, and something easily as being like, I'm a, in, you know, a two-bit intern who's working at the Department of Defense or Department of Education, not even anything
defense-related, sure.
Yeah, we'll do Department of Education. And you're just like, oh, I hate my boss. They have this dumb bill on about charter school subsidies or whatever. It's like, this is so dumb. They've been arguing for 3 weeks. Meh. And you make that a status. You know, could you technically be charged with treason? Or could you be, you know, is that threatening the security of the nation? Or, you know, by certain terms, you know, if you define terrorism as something being revealing something that shouldn't be revealed or breaking confidentiality, as opposed to a specific threat towards the nation's security, if you become more and more lax with the definition, technically, yeah, that's treason, because many of those people have to sign special confidentiality statements. And what may seem like a little quirky, cute, fun Twitter tweet, you know, it's like, yeah, hashtag DOE messing up, you know, yeah, it sounds stupid, but yeah, you could be charged with treason, maybe terrorism, depending on, you know, how that looks. So right now the PRISM scandal is just, it is pretty much a hotbed and makes people wonder, again, it reminds them, one, the internet is not a black hole. Every little thing you write, you type, is there forever. And two, it also makes me think of, like, who's the person who, like, has to read through all that?
Like that, but there are some not good jobs out there.
But no, but I think it also, they're probably like interesting conversations. It's like, you know, you should have seen.
Oh, someone's like following our conversations, like a soap opera or something.
Right?
Is that what you're saying?
But like, wouldn't that be like, I feel like that would be, you know, like you just like, you've had like you have like 300 people in like this huge, like off-site warehouse down in, like, Topeka, Kansas, and they're, like, just like, yo, Bob, did you see, like, this, like, John Benson's, like, conversation to his girlfriend? Like, it's so steamy. Don't worry, we're forwarding it around the office. Like, you know, it's, like, it's kind of, it's hilarious, but it's also very, like, I don't know, my mind kind of goes to, like, it's frightening. Of course it's frightening, but especially Bob Johnson, like, I don't know who he is, but I would feel sorry for him.
The names are changing rapidly to protect
the identities of the innocent, yes. But, yeah.
We'll be following this story.
Oh, we will.
We'll be back.
Shut us down.
Very interesting to see what happens to Mr. Snowden and all those involved.
True statements.
So what do we have on the music department?
I decided that we'd start off with another summer classic.
Summer classic.
You know, Greg, remember when Abercrombie & Fitch was just a clothing line mentioned in a little song back in the 90s and not this big old controversial mess?
I recall.
And New Kids on the Block had a bunch of hits.
They did in their day.
Well, you know what? I'm just going to let the song speak for itself.
All right.
Here you go, folks. A little bit of LFO.
That was LFO with Summer Girls.
Yeah, yeah.
What makes me laugh about that is the sort of things that he's able to throw in as rhymes.
Right? It kind of just comes in like,
oh.
And also, like,
Macaulay
Culkin
was Home Alone. Which you could pass off as, okay, he's naming a lot of things from his youth. But then he's like, Paul Revere.
What? A good man named
you weren't that old. That's not from your childhood.
And I'm trying to remember what there's a certain name to that style of song. I'm trying to find it right now. It's based No. Anyways, there's a specific name for what he's doing. It's like because he has all these like random yes. things that kind of have no relation to each other, but they all rhyme and they somehow yes. work. That's why I mean, back when I first heard the song back in the day, which yeah. was 1999,
yeah,
which was quite a while ago. I just thought it's just such a catchy song and really
it's a
good,
great song.
And really good summer songs
yeah.
are very catchy. They either have a good hook, they have a yeah. good chorus, or it's just something that you can like kind of, it's very poppy, it's very summertimey and very like gets you moving and also kind of, you know, gets you in that mindset. And Summer Girls is just, I don't know, I love it. I think that's just one of those songs that if I listen to, it feels like the summer. It feels like,
yeah. And you want a tidbit about Abercrombie and Fitch's history?
Yes, I would love a little tidbit.
Okay, that's great.
No, Greg.
So,
no.
Back in the day, they were like camping gear. They were like Ernest Hemingway's go-to store for like outfitting yourself for the wilderness.
Interesting.
Yeah, what happened to that?
Obviously, they stopped making tents and started making t-shirts.
Well, boom, perhaps. I mean, yeah, by gear, I also meant, like, clothing. But,
oh, okay.
But
oh,
they,
I thought you meant, like...
Just supplies.
So, yes, but still, no, but that's yeah. still interesting, you know?
Yes, still interesting.
Yeah, now
after
think...
After all these years.
Think about, like, you know, like, if you said, yeah, I'm going to get some camping gear at Abercrombie, it's like...
You're going to make a fire with that crop top?
Are you going to... Are you going to burn that belly tea
right.
for warmth?
You just rephrased what I said.
Yeah, I know.
Whatever. Okay, Kickstarter. You heard of
yes,
this Kickstarter?
I have, and I'll let you take hold on this segment. But yes, I have heard via certain forms of things. Veronica Mars, Zach Braff.
Okay, whoa.
Well, I'm not going to break in any everything. I'm just saying I have heard of the Institute.
You're stealing the punchline.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't want to take too much.
All right, so you know how when you want to like write a book or start a store or film a movie?
Those are all things I've tried to do within the last year, yes.
You know, like taking loans out? You know that?
Yes, I do.
You know how that's like... A way to fund those projects?
Kevin Smith, for instance, got a bunch of credit cards, charged them all, and that's how he made Clerks.
I did not know that.
Yeah. The way he financed Clerks, a little tidbit, was that he got a bunch of credit cards, and this was back in like the 90s where
yeah.
they were just kind of throwing them, charged like $200,000 or whatever, or $60,000. I can't remember the exact price. I think it was $60,000. Made Clerks very low budget, and that's how he got his funding, was that he just kind of duped a bunch of credit cards, companies.
I mean, he paid him back.
Oh, he paid, yeah, it ended up being a great success.
Yeah.
But he kind of, at the time, like, he would take it, like, higher rating stores, like, whatnot. He would, I think at the movie store he was working at, he would kind of, like, put the address of the movie store or the video store.
Okay.
And then when they called for reference to make sure, like, he would pretend like it was like, yeah, you know, definitely this is me and I'm working at this business. And that's how he got a lot of funding for it. And it ended up being a great success, but he also, it was very, 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 very risky because if it all flopped, you know,
he'd be in a lot of debt.
He would be in a lot of debt. But
so,
yes.
The way that relates is people are looking at these alternative funding methods. Take the film example, you know, you'll go and try to sell it to some investors who want to make a return.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And occasionally that might compromise your artistic freedom because they will say, okay, well, we need a star because that'll bring people to the theaters. Or, you know, let's have a happy ending because people love those.
Right.
You know, typically... You're going to go to an indie movie to see a tragedy.
I need to see... I demand Eddie Murphy in at least two quirky outfits and
yes.
a fat suit. And it
yeah.
must.
Those pitches
requests.
Were made fairly frequently over the past 12 years.
Yes.
But nowadays, you can take it to the people.
The masses.
To fund... your projects.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is with Kickstarter.com. And so in this, with this program, with this site, you can let anyone help you fund your project.
Anyone.
And typically what you do is you just promise a little bit in return.
Yes. Whether it's like a credit in your film or whatnot. Like
if we're talking about film
films,
specifically.
It can be like a bumper sticker.
Sure.
Hug. I don't know. There are many things.
Typically, a lot of these come in the form of, hey, donate $20 and we'll send you a t-shirt, or send us $50 and we'll give you the product that will retail for $60. And that actually came specifically from a product that I saw, which was lights for your shoes if you're running at night. It's
okay.
Like a little flashlight that you can strap onto your shoelaces.
Because I'm thinking like Craig, they have shoes that light up when you run.
Right.
But I understand.
And so they are trying to fund mass producing this product. And for example, when you spend $50, they'll give you one for free once it's produced.
Exactly.
Sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you can do that. And really, it runs the gamut of many different types of commercial ventures. If you just look at the different categories, there's art, dance, design, film, food, music, publishing, theater. And so it does range from making Japanese beer-fed Kobe beef jerky to, as you had said earlier, Zach Braff making follow-up to Garden State.
Kind of, sort of follow-up, yeah.
Sort of.
Yes. Yeah, he describes it. It's like, it's not really a follow-up, but it's
kind of a sequel.
In the same vein.
Okay.
Weird thing. But yes, I understand completely. And some of these projects have been quite successful.
Right. Another one that you mentioned is a Veronica Mars movie,
which,
based on the TV show.
Which was completely funded within hours.
Right.
Like, people were super excited for it. But there is a downside. There is a somewhat backlash that people are claiming, right?
Right. But just to further lay out the situation.
Sorry. I'm going to let you further lay it out. I'm sorry.
You post your goal. So if I'm making the shoe product, let's say I need $50,000 to get it produced, market it, get it off the ground sort of thing. And then it'll show your progress, like, I got 2% to my goal so far, and I have 30 days to raise the money. And so I think that when it does not get completely funded, you might get refunded.
I don't necessarily know if that's
giver, perhaps.
100%.
Maybe, maybe not. I mean, it stands to reason that if they don't get to do their thing, they don't just get the money.
I think they might. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Still more research to be done. What is Kickstarter? I'm going to check the Q&A.
Okay, but, so we're talking about the Veronica Mars movie. They said that they needed $2 million to film it. And right now, how much money do you think they raised out of a $2 million goal?
I would say just because I feel like they exceeded. I'm going to lowball it and say they made it, obviously, so at least $2 million. I'm going to say they made $2.5 million.
They made $5.7 million.
Okay,
People who want to just see this happen.
I want super crazy Veronica Mars CGI now. There needs to be super intense Michael Bay-like features.
And so it's interesting to see how the money was broken down, because you do actually get to see how much people gave. And so the lowest pledge level is $1, and you actually don't get you don't get a physical thing. You do get updates throughout the production that presumably they'll email to you as a $1 backer. And close to 6,000 people donated $1. That's a good way to make $6,000, wouldn't you say?
I would say so.
And then over 8,000 people pledge $10 or more, which they'll send you a copy of the script over the internet.
I think that'd be really cool.
That would be cool. Skimming through, for $25, they'll give you a t-shirt. 11,000 people did that. $35, they'll actually send you the movie within days of it being released. Digitally, they'll send
you
a copy.
That's very cool, actually.
That's interesting. And that's sort of like, that $10 covers you actually buying a ticket, and it goes right to them. So that was a pretty smart thing for them to do.
I just found the information.
Okay.
It is an all-or-nothing method. So if the project falls short, no one is charged.
Okay.
So it's only charged until... Okay, so... Mm-hmm. Now it's known. Go ahead.
Let's skip ahead a few. They'll give you a poster, a DVD, if you keep getting closer to a $100 gift. And then we get to some more interesting ones down the line in the four-figure range. So, still actually scrolling down. They have a lot of different backing options. But if you pledge $1,000, you'll go to the premiere. And they offer that to 100 people who purchased at that level. So they made $100,000 offering tickets to the premiere.
That's actually really cool. I would pay $1,000 to go to an official movie premiere. I mean, that's especially
perhaps,
because it's... Well, look at it this way. It's not something you normally get to do, and really the only people who can kind of get into premieres are people who know other people in the industry.
Yeah, but it's interesting, and we could talk about this more when we get to the end of the list, how they're monetizing all these different levels of the movie-making process. And so, there are actually a few $1,000 premiere levels. They sold for the L.A. premiere, the New York premiere, a premiere with the director's family in Texas. But then, once we get to the $2,500 range, you get to be an extra. 20 people paid $2,500 to be an extra. Or,
the funny thing is that you usually get paid to be an extra instead of to pay to be an extra. There you go.
And it does actually say in the relatively short description, like, you know, sometimes we'll need four extras, sometimes we'll need hundreds of extras. And so, like, they didn't offer this to hundreds of people, but it's still just like, you know,
exactly.
There's going to be people who got in a different way. Mm-hmm. But there also is one where you have a speaking role.
I know, I just jumped onto the
okay.
And actually, the funny thing is they actually tell you what your speaking role is.
I know.
Would you like to read it?
Yeah, so one person, and one person was offered this pledge level, $10,000 to have this one line on screen. So it says, you will get a speaking role in the movie. Here's the scene. Veronica is eating with the man in her life. Things have gotten tense between them. You are the waiter/waitress. You approach the table, and you say, your check, sir. We guarantee you will be on camera as you say the line. Unless you go all hammy and ruin the scene and we have to cut you out. But that would be a sad day for all of us. Just say the line. Don't overthink it. You're a waiter. Your motivation is to turn over the table.
And then in addition, they kind of give you all the other stuff and everything. Mm-hmm. But it's just very funny because it's like... Also, I like the pun, hammy, and it's a waiter.
I guess that's a pun.
Kind of
and says, you'll get an invitation to the premiere and the after party. You are, after all, in the movie. Think of yourself as Guy Fleegman from Galaxy Quest. People will surely want autographs.
But you know what?
That's another thing that people typically get paid to do.
Yes.
Be in movies.
But you've just paid $10,000 for a, I think for some people, it would be an amazing opportunity, especially if they love Veronica Mars. Like, there are some people in that fan base who are like, yes,
yeah,
get me within hand touching distance of Kristen Bell, and I'll like die happy.
Yeah.
I'm not one of them. I mean, I still think Kristen Bell is cool and all, but you know, why not? Go for it. I mean, look, if you're going to offer the incentive and somebody's going to pay for it, obviously, which they did, yeah, go for it. That's, you know, because I mean, like, that's really cool. I think objectively, while it's a little ridiculous, yeah, it is also really cool to like have like be able to show your kids like, look, guys, this look, young Greg Jr. I was in a film, Veronica Mars, and I helped bring that film into fruition. That was
right.
Me, and then I got to be a part of it.
Now let's go to the local. There's actually a local film project that's trying to get off the ground.
What is it called?
Via the Kickstarter. It's called Find Out What Happened at Blackwater Road. I don't think that's the name of the movie. That's just what they're calling their project.
Okay,
and so the movie is called Blackwater Road. Currently, okay, so if Veronica Mars was asking for $2 million, they got $5 million. Currently, this one is asking for $17,000. How much did they get?
$456,000.
That's a very specific and on-target guess.
Oh, wait, did they make that?
They did.
Oh, my gosh, I had no idea.
And so this project actually offers similar gifts, if you will. They offer the script. They offer an exclusive cut of the film. Scrolling down for $1,000, you will be in the credits as a legendary backer.
Legendary!
And if you give $5,000, you'll be credited as an executive producer. And it also says you will be credited in the film and on IMDb.
Oh, snap, folks.
An executive producer. So this is your chance to make a splash onto the scene. And so what do you think the impact of Veronica Mars and director Rob Thomas asking for money from fans?
Rob Thomas?
What?
You mean Zach Braff? You said, yeah, Rob Thomas.
No. He's the director of Veronica Mars.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant, because
no.
My mind goes to the singer, and I'm like, you mean Zach Braff?
Uh-huh.
No, go ahead. No, sorry.
So what do you think the impact that has on this project that perhaps, well, absolutely doesn't have the same level of notoriety, but is similarly people trying to produce a film?
Well, some people have argued, and I somewhat agree with this. They've argued that, well, this takes away from, you know, people like Veronica Mars and Zach Braff and more well-known, you know, artists. When they go on Kickstarter, they take up vital funds that could go to more indie, regular people who don't have the connections they do. It's almost as if they're kind of trying to have their cake and eat it.
Yeah.
You know, where they can, like, you know, Kristen Bell could probably walk, well, maybe, the mindset is she could go and pitch this to a studio and try and get funding that way.
Right.
And, you know, if she really thought this was a marketable idea and can get the cast together, and, you know, with her and the director, going to the fan base to get it made is almost, it's somewhat unfair. It's unfair to, and this has especially been apparent with Zach Braff's, you know, a lot of flack was given to him, but it's unfair to the other young filmmakers using Kickstarter, because it's like, nobody's gonna give two minds to my rinky-dink little project.
Yeah.
Because I can't get the press that they can get, you know, because news is going to cover this, you know, their Kickstarter projects way more than mine, and let alone the just general concept of finite funding. People don't have, you know, oodles of money to kind of give to every single project, so the project that they do give to, you know, that even 0.5 of that, you know, $5.7 million would have been greatly appreciated, probably from this group, and actually would have totally exceeded their goal. You know,
mm-hmm.
So I think that also plays a factor into it, because it's kind of like, well, that's cool and all. It's great that there shows that there's an interest, but that takes away from us who really don't have a chance other than Kickstarter.
Worthy of consideration. Earlier I mentioned the project Kobe Red, 100% Japanese beer-fed Kobe beef jerky. I'm going to play another little... Don't look it up.
Okay, I'm not going to look it up.
We're going to play the how much did they ask for, how much did they get game.
Okay.
So they asked for $2,374, and they have 3 days to go. How much did they make?
So this is, just to clarify, this is beer-fed beef.
Yes.
You know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say that it's 273,000? Was their goal?
Oh, no. Their goal was $2,000.
Oh, $2,000? Okay, yeah. They totally got it. They totally got their goal. I think that
we need a dollar amount.
Okay.
What they raise.
I'm going to just say 7,000. I'm going to say they went over. They made 7,000.
They did go over. They made $103,000.
I'm done, folks. You know when they say when you make your goal, you don't have to keep funding it. It's gonna happen. But hey, some of those incentives are fun. What are the incentives? I need to know. I just personally need to know what would compel somebody.
They're basically just pre-selling the beef. So people are basically just making orders.
Ahead of time. Well, that's cool.
And that's amazing. No one. Okay, check this out. This is fascinating.
Okay.
So all these different levels are basically a 3 ounce bag of juicy Kobe Red Japanese Kobe beef, whatever. Okay. So that's what a lot of these pledge levels are. Just getting certain amounts of an order. For pledging $25 or more, you get one Kobe Red logo t-shirt, shipping included. How many backers to that one? Meanwhile, pledging $21 for a bag of beef is 568 backers. So how many people want the t-shirt?
Not that many.
How many? Oh, you're looking at it.
I thought you wanted me to look. You told me to look at it. You said look at it.
I don't think I said look at it.
You said you should check
this out. We'll go to the tape later.
You said check this out.
That was...
I thought
that
you
meant
actually...
To,
I'm sorry.
Okay.
How many people want...
Okay. Zero. So people are literally just trying to make orders of beef. They're not even really interested in just giving them money. Well, I take that back a little bit because 10 people offered $2 just to fund it.
That's so, cool.
Yes, but by and large, so many people just want
this
beer-fed beef jerky.
That's pretty cool.
All of the backers have simply just bought beef.
I would say live and let live. If people want their beer-infused beef, beer-soaked beef jerky, go for it. Live
and let live. Nothing against it.
Nothing. I am all for it. I'm all for it.
Okay, don't look at this one.
I'm not looking at it right now.
Don't check it out.
It's not. My laptop is down.
The title is, We're Putting a TARDIS into Orbit, Really.
Okay.
So, if you're familiar with Doctor Who, he travels around in a police box that travels through time. I'm waiting on a call to correct me on any of this. It's called the TARDIS. a police call box. So, like, if you could picture one of those...
Yes, it's all
old...
blue. Yeah.
Okay, maybe if you can't picture it, pretend like you're an audience member who can't picture it right now.
Whatever.
Okay, folks at home. So it's like one of those old-timey London phone booths that have red, like, French doors or whatever,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, like, the clear ones in New York City that used to exist.
Very true.
Those don't exist anymore. I was just there. Whatever happened to those?
Cell phones, Greg.
Cell phones killed the phone booth, sadly.
Cell phones killed the phone booth box.
But the TARDIS is still a police box, and so these people want to send one into orbit because the doctor travels through space. Still waiting on that call to correct me on any of this.
Okay, so what was their goal?
Their goal was $33,000.
$33,000.
How much money did they make?
Here's what I will say. People love the Doctor Who.
They
love it.
Come out of the woodwork, which is why I'm anticipating.
Which makes me feel like it's like it's like $500,000. I'm not going to be that lugubrious. I will say that
There's 19 days left to go.
There's 19 days left. $33,000 is the goal. I'm going to say, because I know Doctor Who fans, a lot of them, they're very legit about this. I'm going to say they made like $80,000. They made $80,000.
They did get their goal already. $38,000.
Oh, okay.
Reasonable.
Reasonable.
No, except we're talking about sending a police box into space.
Okay,
of course it's not reasonable.
That is my question, because like, aren't there like FAA guidelines, NASA-based guidelines, that's literally impossible to like try and set something like that into orbit? Like, especially like an unidentified flying object of like that magnitude. Like, that's like a no... Like, they're like... Right? Like, do I sound crazy? Like, is that like a... Because I feel like that's totally illegal. Or there's something like... There's like some like regulation that they're breaking.
Well, there's tons of satellites out there.
I know, but this isn't like... This is just some like some random dude who wants to like make a TARDIS and like shoot it up in the air.
It looks like it's a foot tall.
See, now I want
okay,
to.
Okay, he's checking it out.
No,
but, okay, I'll start by reading a little bit of it. It's going to go into low Earth orbit, which is where satellites need to be to actually orbit the Earth and not just fall back down. So we're talking about sending this thing really, really high. Space high. The International Space Station is in low Earth orbit. Seriously. The guys on the International Space Station will be able to look out their windows and say, check out that police call box floating by. So...
And they built it. They built the TARDIS.
Right. But it's a tiny TARDIS.
Okay.
It's like a foot tall.
Okay.
If you could see the picture of them putting the hard drive into the bottom, it's like the size of the width of a hard drive.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
Right. And they'll be giving out t-shirts that say, keep calm and orbit on.
I just saw it. That's
they'll also give pledges... The blueprints to their TARDIS.
The blueprints, and they have the chip and everything. Yeah, that's cool. Well,
so,
you know what, folks? Sorry, I didn't want to steal your thunder.
No, talk.
I guess what I'll say is this. Is the Kickstarter, it's a ton of fun in the sense that, you know, it really gives a lot of opportunity to people. It really does. I mean, like, if you are either an indie band or indie filmmaker or... indie gaming designer, or really anything indie.
As long as you're indie.
As long as you're indie. And it gives you a lot of opportunity. It kind of gives you that chance to you know, if your idea is really worth merit, and if it's really worth something you really believe in, and you think really people will really be interested in, it's a great platform. And I definitely, I think it's really cool. Me and Gray obviously have had a little bit of fun with it, but like, you know, It's a fun little website to kind of check out and kind of see, oh, you know, they are trying to send a TARDIS into orbit or making beer-infused jerky or, you know, it's kind of, if anything, it's, you know, get something to get a quick laugh out of. And I think that,
it's interesting stuff.
Nothing wrong with that.
And like we said, you can find out more info, including on their frequently asked questions, on Kickstarter.com.
Yes.
And that's our show.
That's pretty much our. Should we at least just say what the statistic? What's the NBA finals? What is the
1-1?
1-1. Okay,
tied.
It's tied right now.
Spurs and Heat.
They're going to be at the Spurs, right?
The next game, yeah.
Next
Tuesday.
Game. Okay.
In San Antonio.
San Antone.
We will see you next week on the Sands per Hour.
My name's Amir.
And I'm Greg.
Have a wonderful, wonderful week,
Toodaloo.
Folks.
Toodaloo.